Hello, and welcome to this, the 13th episode of Season 4 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Last episode of Season 4 then, Graham.
Season 4, Ray. 50 episodes or thereabouts, including the odd special. It's been an astonishing journey.
And not without incident in the world at large.
Well, no, indeed. And well, I think we're both looking forward to a short break before starting again with the snappily titled Season 5.
Yes. As the world slowly returns to what everyone seems to want us to call the new normal, it'll be nice to have a couple of weeks out to take stock and enjoy a bit of rest and relaxation.
It will. But before we do that, Ray, we need to finish off our review of the Commerzbank fine.
We absolutely do. Shall we start by talking a bit more about the background to some of the issues faced by the bank, as they're not unique, especially with foreign banks operating in the UK and I guess vice versa?
Absolutely right. And there is a fair bit of detail in the final notice about Commerzbank's infrastructure. Where do you want to start?
Reporting lines, I think. Like all global banks, Commerzbank faced the difficulties involved in effectively having two regulators. There's their home regulator, the BaFin, who naturally have precedence when it comes to group-wide operations, and then the FCA for their UK operations.
And that can immediately cause tensions if there are local rules which are stricter or more arduous to perform than those, say, at group level.
Yes, particularly where you have staff moving between the two locations, as is quite common. It can be difficult to deal with stricter requirements than you're used to, particularly when meeting those requirements is not part of your remuneration.
Yes, it's easy to see where resentment might creep in if suddenly you're having to ask clients you already know and have dealt with, maybe for years, for additional information that you wouldn't need to ask if you were sitting at your former desk in your home country.
And that often isn't helped by the main responsibility for generating that documentation falling to a separate administrative function, which at least in your eyes bears both the responsibility and accountability for successfully completing the due diligence.
Exactly, and none of which is helped, I don't think, by constant changes to that function. And it's clear from the final notice that the due diligence team at Commerzbank had been through a number of reorganisations.
Yes, it started life, at least during the period under review, as the Client Verification Team, or CVT, then became the Client Onboarding Services Team, or COS, before finally becoming the Client Lifecycle Management Team, or CLM, in 2015.
That's already a bit of an alphabet soup, isn't it?
It's a very bad hand at Scrabble, Graham.
Not a vowel in sight. Or one, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, unfortunately, all of those titles, Ray, tend to suggest that they are the ones responsible and therefore de facto accountable for the risks which are assessed through the due diligence process.
All the more so as the CLM team was a global function with potentially somewhat confusing reporting lines.
Yes, and with reporting lines that changed over time.
And as the final notice goes on to make clear, not only was there fairly constant changes in the operating model and the jurisdiction into which these changing functions would report, but they employed a variety of different systems for holding information as well.
And all of that is common to global or even semi-global banks, by which I mean any bank which operates in more than one jurisdiction, largely because they achieve these ends through mergers and acquisitions, which inevitably brings with it legacy systems and colleagues with different ways of thinking and differing cultures and a host of other challenges.
And Graham, as you say, this is not unique to Commerzbank, and that really needs to be borne in mind when forming judgments based on the final notice.
Exactly, Ray. Shall we move on? The final notice then starts to dive into the detail and begins with the Commerzbank risk scoring mechanism.
Yes, and there's a rather cryptic section that starts off very well but then goes slightly off the rails. See what you think. It starts, The level of due diligence performed would depend on the risk associated with the customer, and Commerzbank London would determine this by reference to a systems-generated score assigned to that customer. So far, so good. But then,
yes.
From October 2015 to the end of the relevant period, Commerzbank London's policy also required CLM to consider whether any other information represented risk factors that ought to be taken into consideration for assessing the appropriate risk category for the customer.
Okay, now that rather suggests, Ray, up until 2015, that risk was solely assessed through a system-generated score.
Yeah, that's my reading as well, which would be a tad unusual, to say the least.
Hmm. There's a couple of other things which catch the eye here as well. For example, until 2015, there was no documented policy for a downward adjustment to a customer's risk rating.
Yes, and after 2015, the only time a downward re-rating should be applied, according to the rules, is where previously the higher risk rating was the result of a local requirement, or a rule had been removed, or if the risk score had been incorrectly entered on the system.
Which seems reasonable.
As long as that restriction is enforceable, Graham.
Yes, and the final notice tends to indicate otherwise.
Later in the document, it says that there were 159 instances during the period under review where the risk rating was reduced. Although, as the final notice is at pains to make clear, not all would have been in contravention of the policy.
But implicit in that statement, Ray, is the fact that at least some of them clearly were.
More than a few, if I read it correctly.
Yeah, which reinforces the central point, doesn't it? Never include a policy requirement that you don't have adequate controls in place to enforce. The optics of saying one thing and doing something else are marginally worse than not including it in the first place.
Well, yeah, neither of those are good, but the regulator's definitely not impressed by fine words and poor actions.
A conversation, Ray, we have had many times before.
Yes, we have. Let's move on to the CDD situation. One of the areas of concern was in relation to failure to supply full CDD.
Yes, prior to 2015, Commerzbank had an interesting approach to this. A relationship with a high-risk client had to be terminated if the due diligence requirements couldn't be met or if the counterparty, quotes, continuously and permanently failed to provide the information required.
I'm not entirely sure I understand what that means, Graham. Continuously and permanently. It's a very strange turn of phrase.
All the more so when you hear the three exceptions to that rule, Ray.
I suspect I'm not going to be impressed by this, but go on.
Well, firstly, where the continuation of the relationship would not give rise to significantly increased money laundering risks.
Yep, I'm already uneasy.
Okay. Secondly, where the reason for non-performance was outside the customer's influence.
Whatever that means.
And three, you're going to love this one, the economic interests of Commerzbank outweighed the risk of money laundering posed by the client such that it would be inappropriate to terminate the relationship.
Are you serious?
Yes.
So it was okay to not complete the CDD if the bank was earning so much money it outweighed the risk?
Yes.
What, like Danske Bank did in Estonia?
Yeah, you might think that.
Well, I mean, Graham, the biggest surprise to me is that they actually wrote that into their policy.
Plus, it says, if an exception did apply, the relevant front office manager would have to confirm in writing that there was no suspicion of money laundering.
Drawing a very fine distinction between the risk of money laundering and the suspicion of money laundering.
Yes. And then from 2013 to 2015, the requirement to terminate was broadened to include all risk ratings.
Oh yes, I'd forgotten that the previous requirement was only for high risk. Obviously, it's fine not to have full CDD if you're only medium or low risk.
apparently, yes. Anyway, up to between those dates, they had to terminate subject to the same three exceptions still applying.
And after 2015?
they removed the reference to, quote, continuously and permanently, and removed the exceptions.
Well, hooray for that.
Yes. And then in 2016, they instituted a process to terminate the relationship with clients who had not provided full KYC and for whom the deadline to do so had passed.
Okay. What did they do before that, then?
They would block the account and consider offboarding the client if they hadn't been with the bank for long or didn't fit with the bank's strategy or were unlikely to be counterparties in the future.
That's not a very robust approach, is it?
It doesn't really read that way, no.
Mm. And then there's a whole section on group introduction certificates, GICs.
We've never been fans of GICs, have we, Ray?
No, we haven't, and for all the reasons laid out in the final notice. If you're relying on someone else's due diligence and you need to remediate a client file, they aren't always happy to update the KYC accordingly.
No, and according to the final notice, they often refuse to do so.
To the point that in 2014, Commerzbank London stopped using corporate GICs altogether.
Yes, but not so, however, within the financial institutions business.
Indeed, and it appears that what are referred to as sanity checks revealed some deficiencies.
Yes, and I do detect in the final notice a certain level of intransigence within the financial institutions business to help. Mm. There are quotes that say the financial institutions team were reluctant to, quote, reach out to their clients twice for the same information in the space of a few months, unquote, and that they would not be, quote, prepared to help us complete the KYC, unquote. Mm.
It sounds like a classic case of client capture, Graham, where the relationship manager felt that he or she owed a greater debt of duty to their client than to their employer.
Yes, that's another subject we've spoken about often, right?
Mm. And then internal audit identified 158 clients where they were unable to identify whether they had the requisite GIC in place at the time of onboarding.
Oops.
And what's more, 18 of those clients were high risk.
Oh dear.
But after a review, they decided to carry on accepting GICs in the FI business for medium and low risk clients.
Well, at least they stopped accepting them for high risk.
That's a very generous use of the phrase at least there, Graham.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah. And we must bear in mind that adopting a GIC might mean you don't perform full due diligence that might otherwise reveal high risk factors in low or medium risk cases. Mm. Remember, in different countries, there may be different requirements, so it's hard to ensure that a GIC is based on KYC the newly adopting country would regard as complete.
That is a really good point, Ray, and well made. let's move on then to the risk rating. There's this wonderful quote in the final notice which says, quote, the skilled person identified examples where the calculated risk rating recorded for a customer did not impact on the level of due diligence applied, unquote.
Yeah, and no one ever bothered to ask what the point of calculating a risk rating was?
I don't know, but I can tell you that an enhanced risk rating was introduced in 2017.
Mm. And then there's the due diligence itself. I see that Commerzbank self-identified issues around the levels of due diligence it was collecting.
Or to be more precise, Ray, not collecting.
Well, yeah.
So back in 2012, it discovered that they did not hold sufficient due diligence on all their intermediaries in the private banking, or the PBS, as they called it, business. Following the introduction of a new policy in 2013 and a review of 350 business partners, which identified what they called material concerns, they significantly reduced the number of business partners they had previously worked with.
Which is all very well and highly commendable, but does call into question whatever quality assurance process they had in place to begin with. No matter how many remediation programs you put in place, they're no substitute for a thorough root cause analysis that doesn't just put things right, but tries to ensure they don't happen again in the future.
Yes, there's an old saying, which I'm afraid I repeat like an old gramophone record. You can either do something properly or frequently.
And given the number of repeated remediation programs we've seen in our time, we know which one is the most common.
Sadly, yes. I well remember, Ray, picking up one KYC file which had been remediated four times over the previous 6 years.
Do you want to share with the audience where you were when that happened, Graham?
No.
Fair enough. I see that the skilled person reviewed some of the introducer files after these remediation programs had been completed. And of the five that were reviewed, none met the required standard. They found unidentified red flags which had been identified but not investigated appropriately, and a lack of risk-based approach to due diligence. And that's a quote.
Now, why, Ray, after all of those reviews, did the skilled person find fault with every file?
Well, ultimately, and not surprisingly, Graham, it has to be tone from the top. If the tone from the top is that we do the job properly, compliantly, and first time, and that they empower the right people to resist commercially driven pressures, then these events don't happen, or at least don't happen quite so often. Tone from the top makes it clear that it's not okay to scrimp on a job just because it represents a cost rather than earning income, and that just because you don't benefit personally from an activity, you can't just opt out of doing it.
That's very true. And it doesn't stop there. The skilled person found in 10 out of 61 files reviewed that there was no evidence of PEP or sanctions screening. Mm. There were PEP associations which hadn't had the risk properly considered, and an inability to demonstrate ongoing screening for PEPs in the corporate and markets division, which meant they might have missed triggers that would have required a review.
And then there was a litany of criticisms in relation to beneficial owners. Now, here, we know from experience, they adopt very different approaches in the UK compared with Germany. And this could have been the cause of some of the issues.
Yes, except, of course, this was Commerzbank UK, so it really shouldn't have been.
Mm.
But 46% of the CDD files reviewed by the skilled person revealed a failure to identify and verify the beneficial owners. And in 70%, they failed to verify connected parties. And even when they did so, the information was not always recorded on Commerzbank's systems.
And the skilled person goes on to report that one of the reasons for these failures was that Commerzbank was too willing to accept the customer's word without any independent check.
Heard that before. And now we come to dormancy and offboarding. Now, the final notice records that at the start of the period under review, Commerzbank did not generally offboard clients.
As we suspected at the beginning.
And at the time, Commerzbank had more than 1,000 dormant accounts. And inevitably, this led to accounts trading in some parts of the business, even though the KYC was stale and the client was still technically dormant.
And as we've mentioned before, there was no documented offboarding process, which meant in one case, a client KYC review that should have happened in 2013 didn't take place until 2016. All the while, the client continuing to trade. And when it was reviewed, the decision was taken to offboard the client, but that wasn't completed and the client still continued to trade. The account wasn't actually blocked until November 2017, 4 years after the review should have happened that would have stopped them trading then.
And we could go on, Ray, but I think enough of the story has been told to demonstrate what happens when there is insufficient focus on compliance and too much focus on profitability.
Especially when the firm operates in multiple locations across different business lines with maybe a very assertive and home country aligned front office.
Which I take to mean, we don't do it this way back at home, so I'm not doing it here.
Something like that, and that's as likely to work one way as the other. Anyway,
agreed.
What's next?
Ray, a break before coming back in August for season 5.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. ¶¶